from Psalm 22, and it is verse 1 and verse 24. Psalm 22, verse 1 and verse 24. My God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from saving me, so far from my cries of anguish? And verse 24. For he has not despised or scorned the suffering of the afflicted one. He has not hidden his face from him, but has listened to his cry for help. And then our second reading is taken from Mark's Gospel. Chapter 15, and starting at verse 33. It's Mark chapter 15, starting from verse 33. At noon, darkness came over the whole land until 3 in the afternoon. And at 3 in the afternoon, Jesus cried out in a loud voice, Eloi, Eloi, lema sabachthani, which means, my God, why have you forsaken me? When some of those standing near heard this, they said, listen, he's calling Elijah. Someone ran, filled a sponge with wine, vinegar, put it on a staff, and offered it to Jesus to drink. Now leave him alone. Let's see if Elijah comes to take him down, he said. With a loud cry, Jesus breathed his last. The curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. And when the centurion who stood there in front of Jesus saw how he died, he said, surely this man was the Son of God. Some women were watching from a distance. Among them were Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James the younger, and of Joseph, and Salome. In Galilee, these women had followed him and cared for his needs. Many other women who had come up with him to Jerusalem were also there. This is the word of the Lord.
Thank you. For those of you that remember, I did the same sermon exactly, well, not exactly because it's a different calendar, but I did the Good Friday sermon last year. And it's a funny one because I was sitting there thinking, well, I don't want to say the same thing again. How do you give the same message again without it getting a bit boring? That's okay, I don't care. We can have maybe that was prophetic. Maybe there's something prophetic in that. I like it. Maybe you'll be preaching the Good Friday sermon in, I don't know, 10 years. 10 years, you know what, you don't know. I love that this reading begins with the wonderfully rendered Aramaic. Where are you, Niku? Where's he gone? Over there. Really well read. I grew up in a church where they speak Aramaic, and you rocked that accent and everything. Are you secretly a Galilean Jew from the second century? You're African. I think the fact that you've shaved, I think he's trying to get away from looking like a Galilean Jew from the second century. Talking about Galilean Jew from the second century. Sorry, Tom. There's this amazing moment where Jesus is crying, my God, why have you forsaken me? My God, why have you forsaken me? And it's something that I think captures our imagination. This idea, this Jesus on a cross, who it looks like he's abandoned. And then he cries, my God, why have you forsaken me? And then the people mishear him, because the word for God and the word for Elijah are really similar in the Aramaic. Eloi, Eloi, it sounds like Elijah. And the people have misheard him, and they think he's saying, Elijah, Elijah, why have you forsaken me? So they're getting a bit, it's all a bit confusing. And now they're mocking him. And they're kind of going, oh, look, you're completely abandoned. You've been left alone. Where is God? Where is Elijah? No one's coming to help you. And he's completely abandoned, and he's sitting there, and it's very sad. It's a sad picture of abandonment. Who sometimes feels abandoned? Who sometimes feels like no one's coming to help you? Because I do. I do. Sometimes it feels like you're in trouble and you're in a bad situation and no one is coming to help you, and you feel like you're on your own and you feel left alone and you feel like there's, you know, there's no help, and you feel desperate and you feel like you're at the end of your tether, and it's like horrific, and you go, my God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from saving me? And we have this moment where Jesus screams this out. He declares this from the cross. This Psalm 22, my God, why have you forsaken me? And they mock him. And sometimes we feel abandoned and mocked. But there's a really, really beautiful thing that happens here. Because I don't know if you're aware, but the Psalms, we've numbered them quite recently. But in Jesus' day, they didn't have numbers. In Jesus' day, the Psalms didn't have numbers. And the worship leaders will know this. When you want to sing a particular song, you often name it by the first line. And actually, in the time of Jesus, when you give the first line of a psalm, you're not just quoting that first line, but you're giving the name of the whole psalm. You're giving the name, that's its title. And it's like Jesus, it's not just Jesus saying from the cross, my God, why have you forsaken me? But it's Jesus screaming, Psalm 22, look there. If you want to know what's going on here, read Psalm 22. And it's a really powerful thing, and I think sometimes we miss it, and we take that first line of the psalm, and we sometimes think that is all that's happening, is this abandoned Jesus who has been left alone, and we miss the rest of the psalm. And it's a beautiful psalm. And it begins horrifically. If you want to go to Psalm 22, then now is the time to do it. It begins pretty awfully. My God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from saving me? And then it goes through this awful stuff that's happening. And it's like, and this was written by David, and it was written far, far before Jesus. While David was going through a really hard time, and it's totally prophetic. It's David telling us how he's feeling, but also prophesying about what was going to happen to Jesus. And there's some amazing stuff in here that is so uncannily about Jesus. And when he quotes it, he's quoting things like, I'm poured out like water. All my bones are out of joint. My heart is like wax. It is melted within my breast. My mouth is dried up like a potsherd. My tongue sticks to my mouth. You lay me in the dust of death. There's a whole heap of stuff in there of Jesus just, when he's quoting that, he is quoting some of the deepest, darkest emotions that you can feel of abandonment, loneliness, and feeling forsaken. But then there is a point in this psalm where everything changes. There is a moment in this psalm where everything changes, and he says, but you, O Lord, do not be far away. O my help, come quickly to my aid. Deliver my soul from the sword, my life from the powers of the dog. Save me from the mouth of the lion. From the horns of the wild oxen, you have rescued me. And then it says, in 24, for he did not despise or abhor the afflictions of the afflicted. He did not hide his face from me, but heard me when I cried to him. When Jesus says, my God, why have you forsaken me? He is also declaring in that moment, God has not hid my face from me. And God does not hide his face from you. And for me, this is the, one of the most important things of the Good Friday message is sometimes we feel like God is far, and sometimes we feel like God is hiding his face from us, as if we've done stuff and we've been people that God doesn't want to engage with and wants to stay really far away from. But that is not true. God does not hide his face from you, and he did not hide his face from Jesus on the cross. He does not hide his face from you. He is here. He is pursuing you. And the beauty of Good Friday, the beauty of the cross, is that God pursues you to the absolute ends of everything. There is nowhere that God won't go to have you. We've been singing this song that talks about, you know, it quotes Jesus leaving the 99 to pursue us, and he does. There is nowhere God won't go to pursue you, even to the cross, even to death, even to the ends of all things. He does not hide his face from you. And so I wanted to really kind of focus on a few things, on a couple of things that I've been really feeling God speaking to me about on the cross that just shows this. On the cross, something, hello again. On the cross, something really special, I think, happens. And we talk about sin. In fact, sometimes I think we don't talk enough about sin. Now, even in a staff meeting this week, we spoke about this, how sometimes we don't talk about sin. And I think some people don't like talking about sin because we don't understand really what sin is. And we don't have this, like, I think everyone doesn't like sin. There is not a single person in this world who thinks sin is a good idea. But I think sometimes we are mistaken about what sin is. And I think the wonderful thing about the cross is it's this beautiful picture of everything that is good in the world, meeting everything that is bad in the world, and good triumphing, having the victory. We call Jesus the Lamb of God. And on this Good Friday, we call him the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world. And that is a really special word because there is this whole thing called scapegoats. There is a whole thing called a scapegoat. Can anyone tell me what a scapegoat is? Huh? Yeah, like a sacrificial goat, a scapegoat. Okay, but it's a deeper thing because humans have been doing this for... Ellie, come up for a second. Humans have been doing this for a long time. Come, we're going to use you. Ellie is today's scapegoat. Everyone say, give us a bar. Great. Ellie is today. This took a turn. Ellie is our scapegoat today. And actually, so the idea, and we have this in the Old Testament, this idea that Ellie, you're the scapegoat. We've all done really bad things, right? We've all done really bad things. There are social problems. There are problems in society. There's all of this stuff that's going wrong. So what we're going to do is we're going to pass all the blame onto Ellie, right? Ellie, it's Ellie's fault. Ellie's taking the blame, isn't it? There we go. Ellie is guilty of it. Can you think of everything bad in the world? Ellie's guilty of it. And so what we're going to do is we're going to punish Ellie as the scapegoat for... I don't know. So we're going to punish Ellie as the scapegoat for all of the bad things, and she deserves to die. Die. That's fine. Et cetera. She's the scapegoat. And so we have this system where we scapegoat people, but it's deeper than that as well, because we still do it. We still do it. What we do is we say things like, oh, it's the foreigner's fault. What we do things is we go, oh, there's all of these problems. It must be the European Union. If we leave the European Union, then everything will be fixed. If we don't have as many people taking our jobs in this country, then everything will be fixed. It's their fault. We're going to speak this openly. We do things like go, it's the Tories. The Tories are the reason for all of, just to make this a bit fairer. The Tories are the reason for all of the social issues. So we blame them completely and we scapegoat them. Or we do things like homeless people. It's your own fault that you're homeless. We do things where we blame certain groups of people. We blame individuals. We blame things on people. We scapegoat them. And we think that if they take the blame, then we can get away with it. We still do that today. And what I love about the cross, and this is something that it speaks in, and I've been meditating about this today, is that it speaks into the system. It's ludicrous. Because what we've done is it shows us that we've even tried to scapegoat God in the same way that we've tried to blame everyone for all of the social issues, all these small, we've even tried to do it to God. And how absurd is that? That we try to blame God for all of the social issues of the world. We try to scapegoat him on a cross, and he went with it, and you can sit down. Let's give Ellie a round of applause. Thank you. We even tried to scapegoat God, and what Jesus does is he says, Father, forgive them, Father, forgive them. It shows us the absurdity of some of the things that we do. On the cross, everything that is bad meets everything that is good. That's one of the angles of sin that Christ overcomes. It's just that one example. Another thing I was meditating on is actually the fact that Jesus is victim on the cross shows us that he's standing in solidarity with everything that we have to go through. Do you know, earlier I asked you who felt abandoned and alone and who's had moments, even this year, where you felt pretty bad. Put your hand up if you felt really bad this year, if you felt like a victim, if you felt that things have happened to you that have been outside of your control and it's felt awful. Yeah, a lot of us. And what the cross shows is God who is willing to be there with us. There is no other religion where God suffers and dies on a cross. There is no other religion where God is willing to suffer and die with us. Where God dies. It's not there, because in this faith, we have a God who is willing to pursue us to the end. Who is willing to follow us, to love us into the grave. It's very good. It's very good. And then a third thing that I think is really special. If we go back to Matthew, and I was talking to Ellie about this earlier, it's something we tend to not talk about. It's a little bit of the Easter, of the Good Friday story that sometimes we ignore because it's not convenient. And it says this. So when Jesus died, the tombs were also open. This is verse 52. So Jesus has just died. It says, then Jesus cried again and with a loud voice and breathed his last. At that moment, the curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. The earth shook and the rocks were split. The tombs also were opened and many bodies of the saints who had fallen asleep were raised. It's a little bit of the story that we don't look at a lot. Isn't it? We tend to ignore this bit. The bit where Jesus is on the cross and he's just breathed his last and he's died. And then suddenly graves are opened around Jerusalem and the dead are walking out of the graves. That is mental. The idea that at this moment when the cross is happening, suddenly there are people walking out of tombs around Jerusalem. What is going on there? It sounds absurd. But there's a bit of the story that we often miss about God pursuing us. And that is his pursuit of us into the grave. Because Peter says that he talks about how when Jesus died, he went into death and preached to those who were imprisoned there, which is nuts. And it's a bit of the story that we don't often talk about. But actually, for me, it's my favorite bit. And actually, Holy Saturday is probably, you know, the Saturday, that weird day in between Good Friday and Easter Sunday where nothing is happening, where actually it looks like nothing is happening, but actually everything is happening. Do you ever get that in your life where it feels like nothing is happening? Where you feel like you're in a desert place, where you feel like you're in that middle space? What this story says is when you feel like you're in the desert, when you feel like nothing is happening, when you feel like God is absent, that is actually when everything is happening. That is when Jesus is at work. That is when he is preaching even in the grave of your soul, in the grave of your heart. While you think that you feel like you're dead, while you think that you feel like there's nothing going on in your life, while you feel like you're in the desert place, God is at work and he's preaching to you. He's pursuing you. And it's good. It's good. And so there's this wonderful moment where all of these people are raised and are walking out of tombs because Jesus has gone into death. Jesus has gone into death. He's broken the barrier, not only between heaven and earth, but between earth and the grave. He's broken so many barriers. He's gone to where God should not go. He's broken the rules and he's gone into the grave. And what he's done has meant that the dead can't stay dead. The dead can't stay dead. What he has achieved on the cross. It's before Easter. He's not even been risen, but others are rising. What he's achieved on the cross means that the dead can't stay dead. It's impossible. They've got to come out. He's pursued us even into the grave and he lifts us out. I don't know where you are today. I don't know where you are this morning. But this is why Good Friday is good. Because today, as we look at the cross, as we see the God who stands in solidarity with us, who has shown us how absurd, violence is, who has shown us the meeting place of all that is bad and all that is good and said, I will even embrace that and pursue you into the grave. I will go where no one would go for you. I will pursue you to where no matter how far you run, even into the grave, I will pursue you. I will follow you. There is nowhere I won't go. I'm the God who loves you. I have not hid my face from you. I'm here for you. I'm here to pursue you right now, this morning. I will not leave you alone. And I love you. And you can't stay dead. I don't know how you feel this morning. I don't know where your life is. But when we meet Jesus, we cannot stay dead. You might think you're in the desert, but he's preaching. Are we willing to listen? Amen.